Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
We've always felt like a family. We've always known we were as much a family as anybody else. And just to have it validated this way, socially, is wonderful.
Some voices of the protesters and those in favor of gay marriage in Connecticut. If I was driving out on Sunday morning listening to the news and heard, perhaps a little later than the rest of you did, the Supreme Court on Friday in the state of Connecticut had ruled that gay marriage should be legal in that state. Well, this is the latest of several states that are making moves like this in the courts. And of course, in California, the California voters are being asked to look at that issue fairly soon in a ballot initiative. We're going to be talking about the Supreme Court in Connecticut. There's a decision Friday regarding gay marriage with Peter Wolfgang, executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut. You can join us, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Peter Wolfgang, welcome to Issues Etc.
Todd, thank you so much for having me.
What exactly did the Connecticut Supreme Court have to say on Friday that changed things for the residents of Connecticut with regard to gay marriage?
Well, following in the footsteps of Massachusetts and California, the court, by a very, very split vote, 4-3, has undemocratically forced a radical redefinition of marriage. They have said that there shall be such a thing called same-sex marriage in Connecticut, and that the voters of the state have no say in the matter. The thing to note, the important pattern here, is that in all three states now where we have same-sex marriage, in each state, it was a 4-3 vote by the Supreme Court of that state. It never came about through the democratic process. In all three states, it has been imposed on us by undemocratic judicial fiat. And so we're all very upset and angry about this in Connecticut. We have one of the most liberal left-wing legislatures in the country, and yet even this legislature has said over and over again that marriage is between a man and a woman. So, you know, there's the issue of marriage itself, which we're all very concerned about, but really even just the right to self-government, you know, Abraham Lincoln's basic idea of government of the people, by the people, and for the people. You know, what we're being told is that we have representative government in Connecticut until the radical left decides that we don't, until the secularists don't like the result. Then they can get four judges to just behave as our sort of robed masters and impose these incredible, crazy things on us.
Was there a case that the Supreme Court in Connecticut was hearing that pertained to the issue? And if so, what was it?
Yes, the case was called Kerrigan and Mock versus the Public Health Department of the state of Connecticut. A group of about eight same-sex couples, using even the same lawyers that won the case in Massachusetts, the Goodridge case from a couple years ago, filed an almost identical lawsuit in Connecticut in 2004. Our state Supreme Court heard oral arguments on this case in May of 07, and now here we are almost a year and a half later, and it was very, very unusual for the court to wait this long to issue its ruling. It almost never takes that long for our state Supreme Court, and what a lot of us were beginning to suspect was that the court was deliberately delaying its ruling until after Election Day. Because in Connecticut, now, unlike California, we don't have a remedy where you can gather so many signatures, put a measure directly on the ballot, and let the people have a say on what marriage or any other law should be. We don't have the right of direct initiative. But what we do have in Connecticut is this ballot question that must appear once every 20 years asking state voters if they want to hold a constitutional convention. And providentially, the next time this question appears on the ballot is this election day, November 4th. So it was beginning to look to us like the Supreme Court. We expected all along that the Supreme Court would rule against us, would rule in favor of same-sex marriage. Our biggest concern was that they were holding the ruling until after Election Day because they knew and we suspected that if this ruling came down before Election Day, that that would actually increase our chances of getting a yes vote for the Constitutional Convention. So what we did a couple weeks ago, there was really nothing more we could do at this point to affect the court's ruling, what we suspected it would be. But we felt that we could goad the court, we could bait them into at least releasing the ruling before Election Day. That's the one silver lining in all of this. We held a rally. The Family Institute of Connecticut held a rally at the state capitol in Hartford a couple weeks ago. 3,000 people came to that rally for the purpose of openly questioning the court's integrity and motivations for the delay in this decision. We, of course, asked them one last time to do the right thing, to protect marriage. But the real goal here was to force the court's hand. And, you know, they don't like to have their integrity openly questioned. I mean, some of the stuff that we were putting out there made it into the Connecticut Law Tribune, which is sort of the Bible of the legal community here in Connecticut. And we know these guys, the justices care what their peers think. So, you know, we were able to at least goad them into revealing their decision. And now, because of that, we have more of a shot of getting a yes vote on the Constitutional Convention, which would be the first step in overturning what the court did in protecting marriage in Connecticut.
So with only 30 seconds here, this Constitutional Convention could respond to and could, in effect, undo the decision that the Connecticut Supreme Court issued on Friday regarding gay marriage.
That's right. The purpose of the convention is to propose amendments or revisions to our state constitution. So a marriage protection amendment is a possibility, or at least a right of direct initiative like most other states have, and then we could use that to bring up a marriage protection amendment.
Folks, we have a link posted to the Family Institute of Connecticut under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Peter Wolfgang is executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut. Peter, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
We turn from Connecticut to the other side of the country, California, where for some time now, people have been wondering about gay marriage. They've been living with it in certain sectors of the state as a legal entity, and of course the California voters are going to be asked to rule on this very soon. Randy Thomason joins us, president of Campaign for California Families. Randy, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, good to be with you, Todd.
First of all, your reaction to what happened in Connecticut on Friday.
Outrageous. They're taking the lesson from California's bad justices. We had a 4-3 decision in favor of homosexual marriage on May 15th out here, and then Friday in Connecticut, basically the same ruling, dreaming up homosexual marriage out of thin air. It wasn't written in the Constitution. It never said marriage is between any two people who, quote, love each other, who are, quote, committed to one another. The judges did what they wanted to do. We don't have constitutional government in California right now, and they don't have it anymore in Connecticut. Which is why I'm in favor of a constitutional convention so people can set this right.
What are the California voters going to be asked to vote on when the ballot initiative comes before them on gay marriage?
It's already before them due to the absentee or vote-by-mail system. And so people are voting right now in California. But Election Day, November 4th, we'll know that evening whether the 14 words of the California Marriage Amendment, which say only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California, will pass. If it does, that will mean that the judge's ruling to create homosexual marriage will be overruled by the voters, and marriage will be defined in the state constitution as only for a man and a woman. The marriage license forms will have to be changed again. Pro-family Californians would celebrate and thank God if this indeed passes. It's going to be a close vote.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. How are Californian voters so far polling on this issue?
The last poll showed that Proposition 8 was ahead 47-41% with 10% undecided. It's going to be close because about $20 million is being spent by both the homosexual activists and by the pro-natural marriage leaders. And it's just a war of television commercials and radio ads and flyers and mailers. It's all going to be dependent on who gets out to vote. We're encouraging people in the church to not just be normal and lazy, but to be abnormal and basically get themselves and others to the polls and vote yes on Prop 8.
How do you expect the pro-gay marriage forces, such as they are in California, to react if, in fact, the voters will include a marriage amendment in the California Constitution? About 1 minute.
I think they'll appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, but the battle will actually go back to the state Supreme Court of California, where the question will be, what about those homosexual marriages done over the summer? Are they null and void, or do they get to continue?
With only 30 seconds, then, how would this affect people here in the middle of the country or elsewhere in the United States?
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be a terrible example if we don't keep marriage for a man and a woman for the children, because you'll see more and more states follow the example of California like Connecticut did. Connecticut shows the effect of copycatting of the judges. And you're going to see more of that through wherever there's a state Supreme Court, perhaps even in the state where you live. Barack Obama opposes California's Proposition 8. John McCain supports protecting marriage in the California Constitution. What a difference. I'll see if this affects the California vote for president.
Randy Thomason is president of Campaign for California Families. You can find out more about Prop 8 in California under the on-demand page of our website, issuezetc.org. Randy, thanks for being our guest.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
When we come back from this break, we're going to be listening to some of your comments from the Issues Etc. listener comment line. You know, this comment line just kind of sits there passively out there in the control room. Occasionally, we'll hear it ring, and we'll hear a comment left. Every once in a while, we'll go there and gather all of them up, sort through them, and that's what we're going to do when we come back. We're going to listen to some of the comments from our Issues Etc. listener comment line. It's open 24 hours. Anytime you want to use it, it's available for your comments. They can be criticism. They can be praise. Whatever you want to leave on the Issues Etc. listener comment line. That number, by the way, 618-223-8384. 618-223-8384. The Issues Etc. listener comment line. We'll hear what some of our listeners had to say there right after this.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It is evident that those who prepared this book took seriously Luther's understanding of the Catechism as a text to be prayed.
Pastor John Pless on Treasury of Daily Prayer.
I especially appreciate the devotional gems gleaned from Lutheran writers of the Reformation period, as well as more recent times.
Find out more about Treasury of Daily Prayer at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Treasury of Daily Prayer.
A church and Sunday school for pagans?
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Apologetics Ministry of Answers in Genesis.
Right here in our backyard of Cincinnati, Ohio, there's a church known as the St. John's Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans. The 3rd and 4th grade Sunday school class once studied about a pagan goddess, the so-called Queen of May. According to one of the kids in the class, and as reported in the local newspaper, the goddess blesses all kinds of love. There's no limit to the kinds of love there can be. The goddess said you could say yes to the kind of love you want and no to the ones you don't want. Then they celebrated the pagan holiday, Beltane, with a traditional maypole dance right on the front lawn of the church. Actually, there's no difference between this church and the pagan worshippers we read about all through Scripture. Remember, when the people turn to pagan worship, God judged them. Of course, this church opposes the literal creation position held by our Ministry of Answers in Genesis. They also aggressively defend evolution, which is exactly the foundation of their pagan rituals. Yet another evil fruit of evolutionary teaching.
Is the global warming issue somehow connected to the history presented in Genesis? For some intriguing answers, request our brand new DVD on global warming. It's one of the hot topics during this election time. Just send us a donation of any size and we'll send this DVD to you. Call toll-free 888-89-ANSWERS, 888-89-ANSWERS, or go to the web, answersoffer.org.